Welcome to Movie Moments, discussing the greatest movies of all time. Plus, all the newest films in theaters and streaming. Like us, rate us, share us. Here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
Well, hello again, everybody. It is another edition of Movie Moments. Mike Rags, Chuck Curry, talking the world of movies. Lots of new movies to discuss today with Ghostbusters hitting the screens, the latest edition, and Roadhouse, now streaming on Amazon Prime, and it's their number one movie by no surprise to anyone. Chuck and I both got a chance to see that. We'll talk about that. Chuck will review Ghostbusters as well. And later on in the show, Chuck and I are going to go through Jake Gyllenhaal's career and make the argument that, for me, pound for pound, he might be the best leading man that you could cast in a movie, to me. Now, most of his movies don't rake it in at the box office unless he's in a Marvel movie. However, just his body of work, it's hard to argue that anyone, and I mean the Ryan Goslings, the Ryan Reynolds of the world, anybody at that age bracket is as good as he is, and we'll discuss why later on. So it's going to be a Jake Roadhouse show as we welcome in our good buddy Chuck Curry. Yeah, Chuck, preliminary discussions. I mean, just looking at his body of work, there's a lot of good stuff there, both young and now. And obviously, he's chiseled out of stone now, too. And I think Jake Gyllenhaal, to me, if I'm putting a movie together and I need a 35 to 45-year-old man to star in it, I'm looking at him first and seeing his availability.
It's not Russell Crowe?
No, if I need an overweight middle-aged man, that's the first person I'm putting in. But yeah, you know what I'm saying. I just think that if I need, and I'm talking any genre too.
So I got a question for you right off the bat. So what you're saying in a nutshell is that Jake Gyllenhaal should be the next Batman in James Gunn's DCU.
Why do we got to see? Well, right away, we're casting him in a superhero movie. I don't think it's necessary to do that, but I don't think you could go. I don't think you could go wrong by casting him as a superhero, that's for sure.
Well, the reason I said that is because he granted an interview, I think, with Screen Rant promoting Roadhouse, and they asked him about the possibility of him playing Batman because, you know, back in the day when Nolan was casting Batman Begins, he auditioned with Christian Bale as Bruce Wayne Batman, did not get the role. Well, was it the Pattinson one? I'm not quite. I don't want to mix that up.
I don't think the age is right for the Nolan one.
Yeah, you're right. It was a Pattinson one. They went with Pattinson, I believe, or with Gyllenhaal. Although he did mention in the interview about something differently. But anyway, he did audition for Batman, and he did say that Batman's the classic character. He would love to do it.
So, you sure it wasn't the Affleck one? Maybe it was the Affleck Batman. Maybe that's what he auditioned for.
At the end of the day, there's a lot of Batmans, no?
Yeah, and we'll talk more about Jake's career coming up, and we'll review Roadhouse here in a second. But Chuck got to see the brand new movie on IMAX screens and across the country right now, the latest edition of Ghostbusters, basically a sequel to Afterlife a few years ago, which I actually enjoyed, especially the homage to Harold Ramis at the end. I know Chuck wasn't a big fan of it, but Chuck, what do you think of the follow-up here with all the Ghostbusters on board and Annie Potts in uniform?
Here's my issue with this film off the bat. It takes place now in New York City. And if you remember, in harking back to the days, the original Ghostbusters in 1984 and then Ghostbusters 2, which looks a heck of a lot better, I think, after the latest incarnations of this franchise back in 1989, one of the central characters in the first two Ghostbusters movies was New York City itself. Now, this installment, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, takes place in New York City. There's things about this movie, before I talk about that aspect, why I have somewhat of an issue with it. There's aspects of this movie, Mike, that I think do work. I think McKenna Grace back is extremely
appealing. She's awesome. She's awesome. Yeah,
very appealing.
She's awesome.
In terms of the older cast, Dan Aykroyd, believe it or not, Mike, is a major character in this installment. And he's good. He's good. I enjoyed watching him. He's 71 years old now. I think he looks really good. I've always been a fan. Mm-hmm. So he's good in the film. There's things about the film that I liked. But the issue is that the central theme of the nemesis, the ghost that is becomes the main nemesis in the film, really doesn't start to unravel until the halfway point. Paul Rudd is back. I like him, but there's issues in this movie where his character at one point disappears for 25 minutes. And he never completely feels like he's 100%.
I felt that way in the last one, too. Yeah, he's in it, but he's not really in it.
It doesn't feel like this is a Paul Rudd movie. It feels right. Like Paul Rudd is part of an ensemble. I think the movie is very watchable. It has its moments. There's a nice moment in the film where the McKenna Grace character befriends a ghost. And they sort of touch on things that they don't dive headfirst into. I think it has to do with the possibility of that young character's sexuality. That they hint at, but they just hint at it. But it's very sweet, and I did like that part a lot. William Atherton's back as the mayor.
Yeah,
he's 76 years old. He actually looks really good. So there's a lot of characters in this film. It doesn't all mesh. It's very watchable. I was not bored. I would say, as a whole, it's like a 2 star out of 4, a 5 out of 10 from beginning to end. I kept waiting for it to get better, and it sort of just is what it is. Now, again, I think one of the problems is that the budget was $100 million, and like Afterlife, Frozen Empire feels like art house Ghostbusters, meaning there's no scope to the film. Like it sets things in motion that are perfectly fine, but it never expands on the scope. There's a couple scenes that take place in the streets of New York, and it never really completely envelops the feel and the personality of New York City like the original two Ghostbusters did. And most of the movie is set in the firehouse or in rooms.
It's a soundstage movie. It's not really a New York movie.
Correct. This movie could have took place in Canada. You wouldn't have known the difference. You wouldn't have known. Listen, I can't even say for a fact that they shot this stuff in New York. I don't know. It's probably 85% indoor location, soundstage, 15% where it feels on location in the streets of a city.
Right.
And the movie never really breathes because of that. Now, Bill Murray has one scene in the middle, and then he pops up in like the last 25 minutes. And he looks older, and he's still fun, but it has that feel of you didn't need to go back to the nostalgia well again. You did that in the last film. And I got to tell you, Mike, the movie ends playing who are you going to call, Ray Parker Jr. And it plays throughout the end credits. And I'm like, I mean, it's fun, but like you're talking 40 years removed now. And I'm going to tell you, you're going to laugh at this. There's a scene in the beginning of the movie where I believe it's Paul Rudd's family watching on TV, the old Ghostbusters in 84, and they're dancing to the Ray Parker, Who You Gonna Call song.
They know
in this timeline that song existed. And it was like, okay.
So lukewarm. You're just lukewarm. I mean, that's not fine.
It's not like, oh, this movie's bad, because it's not bad. McKenna Grace is too likable for the movie to be bad. It's not bad. It's just not good. It's not good enough for me to say, hey, Mike, grab your door. You got to take it to the theater. This is something really special.
Now let's look at this. Let's look at this whole series. Let's look at the series as a whole.
Sure.
You mentioned Ghostbusters 2 there, which was a so-so sequel to the original. I mean, it was good. It had its moments, but let's face it. It seemed tired at the time. Halfway through that movie, I was ready to check out. If not for Rick Moranis in Ghostbusters 2, I might not have liked that movie at all, because he's really good in that.
I'm gonna disagree with you on that, because I am a fan. I like it. I think it's solid.
You could make the argument that this movie's gotten legs, and it's, to me, Now, no disrespect, I get the cultural phenomenon of Ghostbusters, but on a whole, alone, standalone movie, it's just okay. It's not extremely funny. The special effects are okay. I just overall, it lasts on Murray's charm, which is big, but Ghostbusters isn't a great movie, Chuck. It performed as a great movie. And the sequels, obviously, I was a fan with the last one, but it's not great high art. I'm just trying to think, why is this movie franchise still alive? I guess is the best question of all. I get the enormity of the original, but it just was not as great as the response it got.
I think you could argue that the franchise could have been a one and done, that it was not overly a franchise. If you look back, listen, Ghostbusters came out in 84. The sequel came out 5 years later, 89, which is a long time for, it's not a Bond movie, right?
Right.
So that is somewhat of a long time. Now, Ghostbusters 2 also came out in the year of 89, which Batman ruled the roost. I mean, actually, Batman sort of hurt or stole the thunder, not only from Ghostbusters 2, but to some extent, at the
sucked
time,
the life out of all of the movies that
of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Because when people think the summer of 1989, really Batman is the focal forefront moment of that summer. It was defining in terms of something different, a big superhero, which people have not a serious bat have not seen in a while. A serious Batman, the marketing aspects of film will change forever. Listen. The female Ghostbusters movie, we always, we joke.
Oh, jeez, I forgot about that movie. Jeez, yeah, let's go into that. I forgot that one even existed.
But here's the thing. And again,
an average movie. Just not.
Ask me how many times I laughed in Frozen Empire.
Oh, I'm sure not as much as you'd like.
Three times.
Yeah.
Three times. I laughed.
Well, even the Afterlife is not a comedy. I mean, there's some funny moments, but. They're not the first one's funny because Bill Murray's in it and Rick Moranis is funny. Everything and Slimer, I guess, is funny. But look,
he's in this
as a Bill Murray vehicle. Stripes is better. Meatballs is better. Caddyshack is better. A lot of his stuff. Those movies those movies to me, I laughed a lot. Ghostbusters, I did not laugh a lot.
I forgot. The actor who is the star of Big Sick, Camille Najami, he has a big part in this Ghostbusters film.
Right,
and he's used as a lot of comic relief. The problem, and not that he's not a talented actor, but what he's doing in the movie is like it gives you maybe a chuckle, but it's not overly funny. And there's just too many Patton Oswalt's in the film. There's too many characters. It's not focused enough script wise on what it needs to do. It relies a lot on nostalgia, which I don't always mind. I'm not one of those people who have an issue with that, but you have to have it in the right place. The screen time of the older cast is very lopsided, with Aykroyd getting the majority of the screen time. Ernie Hudson is perfectly fine. He comes and goes, but this is one of the cases where I will advocate it needed another at least $50 million to open the scope and make New York City a major character in the production. And by not doing that, it turns this entity into an art house Ghostbusters. So I think it might play better at home than it will in a movie theater.
Well, then let's ask the other question. How's it trending? Because it is one of the big new movies to start an early movie season. Will it perform? What's the trending numbers?
Well, it's tracking or trending. They're doing it's supposedly going to open based on Thursday night previews at a $43 million opening weekend. Afterlife did 44. I think it did like 125 overall domestic. Now, this film at a $100 million budget has to do over 200 million worldwide. These films don't play great overseas for some reason. Afterlife did not. So it's going to have to, garner at least respectable word of mouth to have decent legs in the next few weeks. When the movie ends, there is a mid credit scene really not much of a consequence, but clearly they want to keep this franchise going. If they do, and I'm sure they will, I think you got to wipe the slate clean, even with Paul Rudd, and move forward with all new cast and ideas. I think the concept I think works to an extent, but you got to wipe it completely clean to move forward.
Well, and if it was up to you, it'd be all the women back.
Listen, I think ultimately, I know you laugh at this, and you discount my sincerity in this issue, but if they would have cast Sandra Bullock as the lead Ghostbuster female, I think you would be dancing a different tune.
Well, neither here nor there. And the cameos in that movie are just god-awful for the original Ghost. But I just don't even want to talk about that one anymore. All right, Chuck, let's talk Roadhouse here. You got a chance to see it, as did I. It came out on Amazon Prime with Jake Gyllenhaal in the lead, of course. An homage to Patrick Swayze, not a sequel, basically a reboot. And it's performing, obviously, well. As we all knew it would on Amazon Prime. We don't really never know real numbers. We never know real streams and what that actually means. We never know if more people signed up for Amazon Prime because Roadhouse debuted there. I doubt it, considering most of the world and our population already use Amazon Prime. So I'm not sure how many new memberships they drummed up. But Roadhouse debuts stream only. Doug Liman directs, Joel Silver produces, Jake Gyllenhaal stars, and it seems and feels like a movie on your TV. And I actually watched it on my iPad, so it's even on a smaller screen. Let's talk about this film, Chuck. And I got to tell you, in all honesty, I was prepared to not enjoy this movie that much. I do like Jake Gyllenhaal and most of the stuff he's done, but it already had so many demerits, the fact that how they were releasing it and all that stuff. But I have to say, for the majority of this movie, I was highly entertained. I was very much into it. I will say this. There are two stars of this movie. That's Jake and the bar. Everything that takes place outside of that bar is kind of hokey. It's kind of, the villains are, I mean, slapdash characters put together, it seems like, at the last second. Especially the cop. I mean, the crooked cop is just god awful. Some of that stuff is just very hokey and very B grade kind of action movie. But I like the backstory on Gyllenhaal's character. I like his attitude and how he comes into the bar. It seemed like a Western to me, much like they played it in the film. I liked it. Felt like Shane to me. He comes into town to try to straighten things up. And then it actually plays out like Shane would as well. The cast of characters inside the bar are very appealing and likable. Even the young girl who runs the bookstore by the bar is good. I just had problems with the fact when Conor McGregor comes into the film and they have that first fight scene, that's the peak of the movie. It just seemed like they had another 40 minutes to fill, and the drug cartel kind of trying to ruin the bar. It just seemed forced to me, Chuck, to try to make it more than what it really should have been. Now, I know the original Roadhouse had that backstory as well, but Ben Gazzara was a real good villain, great. And dark and menacing. Obviously, the guy who plays the villain here, I've liked him in other films. It just seemed a little disjointed. I think Jake's magnetic on screen. He's very good. He's better than the material, so he heightens the material. So I got an enjoyment out of it. Again, if I would have went on a Friday night at 7:30, a debut, in a big screen on an IMAX, would my perspective be different? Are your expectations lowered because you're watching it on a stream? I don't know. I just know that I got enough enjoyment out of it to recommend it. I'd watch it again. And it does leave things kind of open towards the end of the film about maybe continuing what they're going to do. But for me, as an action movie, it reminded me of an 80s B movie that I really got a lot of enjoyment out of. However, there are a lot of caveats here. And there is a lot of eye rolling in this film. I'm not going to lie to you. But the action's tight. It's directed well by Doug Liman. It's performed well by everybody. Conor McGregor is as over the top as you want him to be. I just felt like it just falls short of anything really good because it just gets a little kind of off the rails with its subplots and but the bar itself, everything that happens in that bar and with Jake Gyllenhaal really works for me. Everything else, yeah, it's an eye roll. I would recommend it though. I think it's a 2.5-3 star movie. I think it's good enough to tell people, you know what, it's a nice honor to the original Roadhouse. By far not as good, but you know, I've gone on record, I'm not a huge fan of that movie either. I think it's good. But I'd recommend this movie. I sense you might differ from my opinion, but I was surprised that I didn't hate this movie. Let's put it that way.
I got a couple of questions for you right off the bat. The other day, my wife went to get a hair done. So I was sitting in my shop and I was looking for something to watch early in the morning. And I stumbled upon, once again, Burt Reynolds Malone from 1987. And I got to tell you, I enjoyed the heck out of it. I just want to say that for the record. I like the Shane. I like the Shane concept. It's always worked for me. You know, you take Jean-Claude Van Damme in a movie like Nowhere to Run.
Right.
I still,
right.
I enjoy, I can
Drifter
watch that.
Comes into town and saves the day. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason High Noon is so popular, right?
Right.
And these movies don't have to be high art to be very entertaining and good. In 1989, I remember going into a movie theater first day, Friday, first show. I went to see Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. And I got to tell you, I was blown away how much I enjoyed that movie on a pulp B-movie level. And I went back the next day to watch it again. We've talked about on this show for the last few years about the psychology of theatrical versus streaming. And are our expectations lowered when we watch a streaming product? And the buy question to that main question I just asked Mike would be, are the filmmakers, do they have the same mindset when they make the movie, knowing it's going to be a streaming film for the most part, right?
Right.
Do they make this film, do they cut corners? Do they take shortcuts? I'll give you an example before I give you my main thought.
Well, the producers of this movie were not. I mean, they thought, you know, pen to paper, they thought this was going to be a theatrical release.
Initially, but when they signed their name on the dotted line and got more budget, when they got $80 million instead of 60, they knew it would be a streaming film, right? So let's hear me out on this. When the movie opens, right, there's two fighters in an octagon fighting, right? Mm-hmm. First thing I notice, and it sort of really took me back, I could tell they CGI'd that fight, okay? Not completely, but there were moments in their movement that were CGI. And it bothered me, okay? I thought a lot of the night stuff was shot very dark for me. It wasn't lit the way I thought it should have been. That sort of bothered me. Jake Gyllenhaal, his character in the film, he's good, and he's all in this film. And I'll ask you before I expand, when you watched this film, were you comparing it to the original as you were watching it, or
No.
You removed that from your mind?
I removed it from my mind. I will say, one of the problems I have with his character is you get why he's brooding and why he is the way he is now, but you never really understand the darkness behind his character as to what, you know, what levels his character, why his character went to the levels it did. In that octagon ring, you never really quite understand the back story as to why. And I don't want to give too much away as to why the events right. that happened in the octagon happen. You get why he's like he is now, but you don't get you don't ever understand why he would go to those lengths in the ring.
I think the Dalton character that Gyllenhaal is playing clearly is more complex and darker.
Yes.
There are moments in this movie that it gets dark. I tell you a moment that I liked where the first 40 minutes, for the most part, I liked. I was like, okay, this is a little different, but for the most part, Gyllenhaal's playing a character that I could get into. The side characters I thought had potential
appeal.
There's a waitress character in this movie.
Yeah.
Right? Who, how would you describe her? She's got glasses.
Yeah.
She walks into his houseboat, right? Mm-hmm. And Jake's in bed. He has no shirt on. You later see he's in his underwear, right? So he looks at her, and he looks at her as if, I don't have clothes on. Why are you coming down here? And she says to him, it's okay. I have brothers. I laughed out loud. I thought, okay, that's the type of tone you want in a Roadhouse movie, because yeah, he could kick ass. He's a death machine, but he's connectable to the side characters on a human level. Right.
And I think they do that a lot in the film. And as I say, you're saying a lot of the same things I have. Everything in that bar clicks when they're in the bar and he's around those people. He even has some witty one-line banners, and with the girl at the bookstore too, they humanize him there as well. And I think there was a connection there. I just think that everything, you know, and I'm sure you would agree, everything outside of that bar, including the villains, and I like some of the people he had to fight in the bar. I thought that first fight seemed very effective, how he handles himself and you know, and how he diffuses the moment and then takes them all to the hospital. I thought that was kind of clever.
Yes, I agree. And again, I think the first 40 minutes, the movie's on track, right? Here's where I have some issues. In the original film,
Gazzara's character, yeah.
Gazzara is Brad Wesley. He's the villain. He's awesome, okay? Nothing of consequence in this film is good. Sam Elliott as the mentor of Dalton, he's iconic in that film. Okay. They don't have a character like this in this film. Okay.
I'm fine with that. It wasn't needed.
The doctor character, his semi love interest in this film is underwritten, right? Yeah. She's underwritten. Not that she's not appealing, but Kelly Lynch and Patrick Swayze had a good bond and a good connection, right? And it was sexualization. There was a romantic connection.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Here's another issue in this film. In the original, Jeff Healey is he's the blind singer, blind in real life.
Yeah.
Okay? As Cody, a great character in that original film. And then the girl who played Carrie, who is a female friend of Dalton, and she was the girl from the Charles Bronson movie, 10 to Midnight. She was in that film. Yeah. She's really good. And then Terry Funk.
See, here's, I think one of the issues, original. I think one of the issues is, and you're doing it is, and maybe why this is what happens when you reboot a franchise, it's inevitably going to be compared to the original, where this movie isn't fair to compare because it lends its name in the title character, but there's really nothing else in it like the original.
Here's why I agree, but I also don't agree. I want to talk more about Conor McGregor in a second. When Zack Snyder remade Dawn of the Dead, now you got to understand, Dawn of the Dead 78 is one of my top 10 all-time favorite movies, horror or any genre of all time.
So maybe it's unfair to compare a movie like this to one of your all-time favorite movies. Maybe that wouldn't be fair.
So when I watched Dawn of the Dead, Snyder's version in 2004, I still loved it because a good movie has an effect and it's going to pull you in. If it's good, it's good. If it's not good, it's not good. Here's the issue I have with this film. I like the first 40 minutes. I like Jake Gyllenhaal. Yes, he's darker, more complex. I'm fine with that. A lot of the side characters I thought had a lot of potential. And some of it, there is seeds of a connection and a bond, and I like that. When Conor McGregor enters the movie, Mike, I couldn't help but say to myself, there's little doubt that the people who helped finance this movie, whether it's Amazon Prime, had a connection with MMA. And MMA came to them and said, we want to team up on some sort of high-profile project, and we want to integrate MMA into your project. And they said, well, we got to redo a Roadhouse. We have a good idea. Let's bring in Conor McGregor as a nemesis to the Dalton character played by Gyllenhaal. And I think that the script writing and the direction in this film took a back seat and bowed down to that shoehorn of Conor McGregor being in this movie. And when he enters the film, Mike, to me, it doesn't feel like a cohesive adult story anymore. It feels like a cartoon character is wedged into material that is on a different plane. And I couldn't help.
I don't disagree.
I couldn't help personally shake my head to say to myself, this is not a character in a movie. It's just a product placement
Right. It's like if Jake Gyllenhaal was carrying around a Pepsi can the whole movie. It's basically, it felt like, let's shoehorn some advertisement into our sport here into this movie. I get it.
And I know it's 2024, but hear me out on this.
He's
okay. I didn't really care for Jake Gyllenhaal to defeat him.
Hate him.
No, I just felt like he was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
That it didn't have gravitas. It didn't have weight for me to feel like this was that this is the same material that came before it when he's not introduced into the movie.
I get it.
If that makes sense.
It does make sense. I would only say that I thought the fight scenes between the two of them were done very well, and I felt I mean, granted, you kind of know how these fights are going to end, right? And you kind of know how the movie's going to end. Let's not kid ourselves here. But I thought there was some suspense on things were going to happen, especially that final fight scene. I thought it was done very well. I actually liked the tag-on ending, too. I thought that was clever and kind of funny with what they did with the characters. For a movie like this it felt a little over, like when Hulk Hogan's villain and No Holds Barred is Zeus, and it's just like, all right, so let's just publicize the WWF. It doesn't make any sense. I get what you're saying, but I thought his performance was villainous enough to say, I can't wait till he gets his ass kicked. I did feel that way. I want Jake to put him in his place.
I got a question for you. When Gyllenhaal's Dalton gets stabbed in this movie, and it almost insinuates, because he's so muscled up, that a stab wound.
He gets stabbed a lot, by the way, in this movie.
Yeah, it's a little much, no?
Yeah. This is a Charles Bronson movie. This is a Chuck Norris movie.
Here's another issue I had with the film. The original, again, I'm making comparisons, I can't help it. The Double Deuce is the name of the establishment in the original. They call this one simply Roadhouse, and she explains to him why.
Yeah.
Like
the house by the road.
Why?
I'm trying to be as fair to this movie as possible. So you love the original more than I do. So I think that's part of the problem here.
I do love it.
And I like Jake more than you do. So I think that's why we're at the dividing line here, Chuck. I think we both agree that there's very watchable moments in this movie. I liked enough of it to recommend it. And I agree the love interest here is nowhere near the original. She's okay. And I just think she's forced into the movie. And then actually extra forced into the movie with the subplot, and her connection to the subplot was not needed at all. It's all grade C script material here, and how they're all these characters intertwined with each other. And there was no out, you know what? I kind of wish there was another person helping him other than her just along the way, much like a Sam Elliott, but that's neither here nor there. I just think we both agree. Look, this is B movie, type material. Elevated for me because of his performance, and the action scenes are good. The action scenes are really good in this movie. Lyman knows what he's doing.
I agree. Here's the deal. You're going to laugh, but I just want to go over this one more time. In Malone, the Burt Reynolds movie, right?
So you need Jake Gyllenhaal to have a bad toupee on his head and really awful dialogue. Is that what you want in the movie? I don't understand.
In Malone, the subtle scenes that Burt Reynolds' Malone character has with Cynthia Gibb and her father, played by
Nobody cares.
By Scott, who is Herschel on The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But hear me out. If you just take a little time in the script to have, if they just took more time in the script to have Gyllenhaal have another scene with the girl, with the little girl at the bookstore with the bat, right? If you just expand that by another 6 minutes, if you just have one more scene with the nurse, it makes the movie better. Like you're overlapping too much Conor McGregor, thinking that's what makes the movie fly.
That's fine. That's fair. But to give merit to Malone because of its depth,
I do.
I think you might be the only person on earth who feels that way. I think you might be going a little bit over the top here. That's like saying I loved all the depth that they really, you know, thank God they made Missing in Action 2 the beginning, because it really fleshed out that character of Chuck Norris. That's what you're doing right now. You know, thank God they made 6 Death Wishes, because that final Death Wish, they really added a lot of depth to what, you know, Cannon knew what they were doing here when they kept making Death Wish movies, because that one scene that Charles Bronson had with Ed Lauder, boy, that's the connection you need. I mean,
Let me explain. Death Wish 3 is one of my all-time favorite B-movies. So stop knocking that one. Death Wish 5 is the problem. 4 is all right.
The connection he made with Deborah Raffin or whoever the hell it was in the 5th. I mean, how he didn't get nominated for that is beyond me. And Cynthia Gibb, boy, she, after that Malone, she really took off. Her career skyrocketed because of just of the depth that she had in her character. Come on, Chuck. These movies suck. That movie sucked. And that performance sucked. And his hairpiece sucked. The worst his hairpiece was in a movie, the worse the movie's going to be. Go back. Look at Burt Reynolds' movie. Good hairpiece, good movie. Bad hairpiece, bad movie.
For our audience, which is expanding on a weekly basis, I just want to say I like Malone. In your final thoughts of Roadhouse, what would you give it? Would you give it overall?
I think it's about a 7 out of 10. I'd give it maybe a borderline 3-star. Like I said, it's not high art. Again, I think my appeal to Jake Gyllenhaal and what he brings to characters on screen helped out in this movie. If this movie starred someone else, I might not have bought in. Let's just put it that way.
5.5 out of 10 for me. It has some merit. It has issues. Not as good as the original. I think another rewrite or two would and a little bit less Conor McGregor, and I think this movie would have been a lot better. Still, if I wouldn't tell people not to watch it. I think it has enough merit to say, it's worth a watch for sure.
Would it have outperformed Ghostbusters released in theaters this weekend?
No, because it would not have done in the 40s. But like we said last week, it would have did in the 20s. There would have been enough interest to get this film to 20, 25 million. Hands down, it would have. I mean, listen, there was enough awareness in terms of marketing for a streaming release. I mean, a lot of people I know, they're talking about, did you see Roadhouse? I want to see Roadhouse.
I heard,
you know, this they got the buzz out. There's no doubt about that.
Before we go into Jake's career, let's break down some movie news and talk some other stuff here before we do that.
Sure. Did you get a chance to watch the trailer? Let me just expand, because I know your reaction is going to be. Warner Brothers released what they call a teaser trailer. I think it's about a minute and 15 seconds for Beetlejuice 2, which is titled Beetlejuice, once again, directed by Tim Burton, starring Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice, Winona Ryder is back, is Lydia, Catherine O'Hara back. I got to tell you, Mike, as teasers go, I thought this was excellent. They did, I think, a phenomenal job cutting a minute and 15 seconds out of the film. Keaton appears at the end. He says a great line. The juice is loose. It has a feel in terms of practical of model effects, just like the original. The credit sequences in the end credit here of the trailer was done exactly like the original. It comes out September 6th, which I think is an odd release date. I guess looking for the Halloween crowd. I think it'd do a lot better in the summer, but it got me jacked up. I like what I saw.
Yeah, I thought it was done well. If you're a fan of the movie, you're definitely going to get excited about it. There's no doubt about it. It hits all the notes. They show Jenna Ortega enough for the young fans to be like, I might be into seeing this movie. Yeah, I think it hit all the notes. I got no problem with what they did. And they're going to be able to hide the age of Michael Keaton easily in this film. Winona looks great. Catherine O'Hara looks great. And I love the use of Deo throughout the entire preview.
Excellent.
It's a good teaser trailer. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It hits all the marks you need to get you excited for the next trailer.
Now, Civil War, a movie we spoke about a lot. You know, the buzz, really good. They screened it at a film festival. A lot of people talking about it. Comes out April 12th. Well, the tracking projections came out. This movie's tracking between $18 and $25 million. I don't know if you noticed when you put on Roadhouse, the main sponsor was the trailer to Civil War. That's what popped up. That was the commercial. So it's going to get a lot of awareness with the trailer attached to the streaming release of Roadhouse. As I said last week, I'm excited to actually to see this film.
All right, Chuck, let's talk about Jake real quick here. You know, we started with the debate, you know, about who would you cast if you're looking for a 40-year-old actor lead in a film. And I could argue that Jake Gyllenhaal might be the way to go. And a lot of his movies, even as a youngster, to me, he's always been consistent as a performances, Chuck, and very appealing on screen. Now, many people may or may not know his first movie. He is Billy Crystal's son in City Slickers back in 1991, right, where he does that neat trick with his double jointedness. Probably how he got cast, I don't know, but obviously he is a Maggie's brother, and his dad was a big time director too. So he comes from the star system here. But right, the first time I noticed him, Chuck, and I saw what he could do on screen, and it's back to back really between October Sky and Donnie Darko, which Donnie Darko got a lot of audience in the cult status, and it's a real good, real dark movie, and he's very good in it. But to me, his Homer Hickam in October Sky is very effective, very appealing, heartfelt. His relationship with Chris Cooper is so good in this film. He embodies the true story that October Sky is all about. I'm a huge fan of this movie. It's one of the best of 1999, and he carries it from opening scene to the end, and he holds his own against a great actor like Chris Cooper in all their scenes together.
I agree with you. I'm a big fan of that film. I saw that in a theater, and I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, he could be early on, he could be heartfelt, and he could go a little bit darker, and I think those two movies are a perfect example of his range, which he would show as his career progresses.
And Donnie Darko, really go back and watch that. That movie just got huge, and not a big theatrical release, and got big on video. Real good subject matter. He does another interesting turn in Moonlight Mile, opposite of Dustin Hoffman and Sharon Stone, Susan Sarandon. Not a great movie about a kid who befriends a couple who lost their child, but again, it just shows his depth. And how about him with the big crush on Jennifer Aniston in The Good Girl too, from Mike White's movie from 2002? Jennifer got all, you know, high praise for that movie, and a lot of it had to do with the co-stars around him, and he was one of them. And then he first dips his toe into a disaster film, Chuck, in 2004, which I'm sure back in the day, 20 years ago, when we saw, well, Jake Gyllenhaal is going to be in this movie, kind of weird. But that's what helps that movie, is that sprinkled throughout that film are a lot of actors you wouldn't necessarily see in a genre film. And that always helps a disaster movie. And having him in that film as Dennis Quaid's son trapped in New York City library, he's very good. And I thought that his scenes trying to get the penicillin against the wolves on the boat, I thought all that stuff is done really well. And having serious actors play these roles in a film like this always elevates the film.
And I liked his chemistry with Emma Rossum. I thought it was very sweet. You know, he gave an interview not too long ago, and the interviewer brought up this film, and he said, "I work with Dennis Quaid." He actually forgot that he worked with Dennis Quaid. And it's so, and that made me realize that Gyllenhaal is a little bit of a slight oddball to an extent, but I thought that was funny.
His interviews are good, actually. He does some.
I just watched an interview he did with Howard Stern promoting Roadhouse, and he was very open and honest. He loves the industry. He has high praise and good stories for his coworkers. I thought he's a very good interview.
Well, think about it. Does October Sky, Donnie Darko, The Day After Tomorrow, so different genre films, and then he gets an Oscar nomination for the highly praised Brokeback Mountain, starring opposite Heath Ledger, about cowboys in love, directed by Ang Lee. And I think that's really the movie where people said, okay, this kid's a viable movie star. Let's start casting him. And, you know, Brokeback Mountain, look, I liked it. Good movie. A little overpraised because I think the subject matter that it is, but there's no doubt about it. They have chemistry together on that screen, Chuck, and a lot of it has to do with his performance.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that movie was critically acclaimed at the Oscars. You know, you always, because of subject matter,
right,
you get you know, you get your naysayers around the edges, but it's a quality movie with great performances. And listen, as an actor, you know, not easy subject matter to jump into. He did a great job. He did a great job.
Got an Oscar nomination for it too. It was only one so far. We'll talk about some of the other ones he probably should have gotten. He then did Jarhead, the action war movie in 2005. But to me, a part of the ensemble cast, working with David Fincher again, Zodiac. He's the backbone of this film, Chuck. Him and Robert Downey Jr. trying to solve who killed who is the Zodiac killer.
Great movie. And that's a movie that plays better and better over time. That movie's one of those movies that is sort of timeless when you watch it now. It just plays really well. It's so well done. Good acting. And he spearheads that cast. He's really, really good at it.
He would then do Rendition and Brothers back to back. And then his one foray into maybe a big time action, let's get a franchise behind it, kind of tanked, Chuck, and Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time went nowhere. I think that was maybe a little comeuppance, like, all right, well, maybe I'm just not ready for this type of role.
I think that was a paycheck. I think they offered him a big paycheck and he did it. They wanted to turn that, I think, into a franchise property. I think he was sort of shoehorned into that to some extent. I don't think that role fit him very well.
No, probably he's miscast in that film, to say the least.
I would agree.
But I thought he was well cast in Love and Other Drugs, his romantic comedy with Anne Hathaway. Very R-rated film. It's a good film. Probably could have done a little less Josh Gad, but a little more them together. But they definitely had chemistry. And then a movie I'm a huge fan of. I remember seeing it. Definitely a high concept movie, but his really best action movie to date. And that's the Duncan Jones movie Source Code, where he's on a transit train in Chicago and he keeps going back in time to try to save the train from exploding from a terrorist. Michelle Monaghan's in it as well as Vera Farmiga. And also you get Jeffrey Wright. This movie's really good, Chuck. This is like a Groundhog Day action flick that keeps going over and over and over again. Might not have the payoff you want, but I'm telling you, he's real good in it. And he shows, like, just put me around good material where there's great action and I can carry a film. And Source Code is one of those lost little action genre films. Good sci-fi film here too, Chuck.
I liked it.
End of Watch comes out, where he plays a LA cop in 2012 along with Michael Pena and Anna Kendrick. And then, Chuck, to me, maybe his best performance, I know you're going to lean towards Nightcrawler, but I thought his turn as Detective Loki in Prisoners, first of all, that movie is a 4-star movie. Creepy from beginning to end, with a great payoff at the end and awesome performances by Hugh Jackman and Paul Dano and everybody in it. But his detective character, with the little intricacies that he has, the little ticks that he gives the character, his confrontations and resolutions with Hugh Jackman, and to me, stands head and shoulders above all the other stuff that I love in this movie. He should have gotten an Oscar nomination for this film, as well as Nightcrawler, which we'll get to. But go back and watch Prisoners. It is a great movie directed by Denis Villeneuve, who's getting a lot of praise now for the Dune movies. But Prisoners is an awesome movie.
I completely agree. I think I watched that a couple times. In a theater, I do think it's a perfect film. Really good movie. And again, it shows example of you can make great movies that are adult oriented, character driven, good scripting, good direction, and obviously the most important, which is good acting.
And then, of course, we'll lead right into, he does play twin brothers in Enemy that not many people saw, but I know you're a big fan of Nightcrawler. He did get a Golden Globe nom, but got robbed of any kind of Oscar nom.
It's always perplexing how the Academy just overlooked this film. And the question is why. I think if you took this movie, Nightcrawler, and it was made in the 1970s, and Jake Gyllenhaal was born in that era to play that role, this would have got multiple Oscar nominations. It really did feel like this generation's Taxi Driver. It's a terrific script, thought-provoking, works on multiple levels. Rene Russo is really good in the film. I believe a husband directed the movie, but Gyllenhaal is all in, great acting. And I really love this movie. I think it's great.
And then, Chuck, another movie that's a lost boxing movie that we both like, and that's Southpaw that nobody really went to see. Talk about maybe indications that he'd be able to play the Dalton character now. This is like no shirt on, buff, good little action movie here, boxing movie that, again, kind of got lost opposite Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, I mean, she's good in the film. It's a solid movie that did not do the box office that they wanted to. But I got to tell you, going over like a lot of these films you mentioned, it's a really diverse, solid career. No doubt.
Absolutely. And Everest comes next. He's part of an all-star cast there. Another retelling.
I like that movie a lot.
And he's good in it as well. And I'm a big fan. Nobody saw this movie of Demolition, which came out right after that too, about an investment banker who's struggling after losing his wife in a car crash. That's a real good movie, Chuck, opposite Naomi Watts there too. Go check that out. Nocturnal Animals got a lot of heads turning back at Oscar time 2016. He's part of that ensemble cast. I wasn't a fan of Life, the sci-fi movie that opposite Ryan Reynolds that came out back in 2017. However, he did back it up nicely with another strong performance about the Boston Marathon runner who lost his legs and stronger, right? He plays Jeff Bauman in that story.
Right.
And he's,
right.
You know, he trims it down, very more of an internal character there who doesn't have to take his shirt off at all and plays somebody in real life to a T.
Yeah, he's good in that film. He's good in that film. And I got to tell you, whoever is his handler or you know, people he gets advice in terms of movies choices, I'm sure he has obviously the majority of influence because it's him. I say very good choices, very good choices.
I'd say too. And then he dipped his toe in the Marvel Universe in 2019, playing Mysterio in Spider-Man Far From Home. Interesting mix of ally then villain in this film, Chuck. I actually thought he was better as Quentin Beck, the ally part of it, than Mysterio. But I liked him in this film. I thought it worked. He showed he could play the bad guy.
Yeah, he was fine in it.
And then to me, another lost movie. This was a COVID movie that I think people should go rediscover on Netflix. Go watch The Guilty on Netflix right now, where he plays a demoted cop who's now a dispatch operator. It's all him on screen. The twists and turns of this movie is so good. Nobody's seen this movie directed by Antoine Fuqua. It's a real good, you know what? Check it out tonight on Netflix. You're going to be surprised at how much you like it.
I, again, would agree.
And then he wrap up the last few years. Ambulance, another action movie. Struggled because of the times we're in theaters. Not a bad movie. Michael Bay directed that one. And then Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, which came out last year.
And that's really good.
That's a good movie, too. He befriends, right? A translator, right? Iraqi war. Yeah, that's a good flick. And then, of course, Roadhouse. But, you know, up and down, he's got 61 credits. But he's all over the place, Chuck, in the kind of roles he can play. And that's why I think, look, if I'm starting a movie now and I need that actor, I'm taking him over Ryan Reynolds, aren't you?
Yeah, here's what's interesting about him. He still almost feels like an outsider to Hollywood. Like, you really don't see him pop up at the award shows. Do you remember him coming out?
No, not at all.
I don't really remember him at the award shows. He does give interviews. He is very personable and like I stated, you know, gives a really good interview. He's certainly an interesting person, and that is a diverse body of work, and I think he's got a lot more to give going forward. And I think the focal point of any acting talent, actor is you got to be diverse, and you got to give different audiences different things. And if you do that, I think your career will last a long time. And he's done a good job at doing that.
And he certainly in Roadhouse does not look 43 years old, Chuck. My gosh, and I would say, look. Essential, go back and watch October Sky, go back and watch Zodiac, go back and watch Source Code, go back and watch Prisoners, for God's sake, Nightcrawler, Everest. I mean, you've got plenty of material now to start believing what we believe. This kid can carry a movie and should get cast. And one thing it shows too, he's never stopped working either, Chuck. He never took time off. You might not have seen the movies he released in a certain year, but he's always done different things, weaving in and out of characters left and right ever since October Sky.
I agree, and I look very much forward to seeing him play Bruce Wayne Batman.
We'll see. You know, he is.
I couldn't help myself.
He is starring in an Apple series coming up, which is kind of interesting, and that's Presumed Innocent. He's taking on the Rusty Savage role that Harrison Ford made popular back in the day. So that's going to be an 8-episode arc, which I'm really looking forward to. And again, a lot of it is because he's going to be the star of it. So, all right, an interesting show, to say the least. After this, go check out Roadhouse now and see if you think like Chuck and I think. Chuck, always a pleasure. We'll do it again next week.
To the audience, thank you very much for listening. Pleasure, Mike.
Thanks for listening to Movie Moments with Chuck Curry and Mike Rags. Download and listen to an archive show, or be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts to hear our new episode.